This is Ken Schreiner, the voice of the Green Arrow.
This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman.
You are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
The original Justice League has become a memory.
I am resigning from the Justice League.
What's going to happen to the League now?
We rebuild from the ashes of that great conflict. A new team has arisen. A much, much bigger team.
Each of you brings something different to the table.
Old friends, new heroes. And as usual, plenty of bad guys jumping up to get beat down.
Calm down, and I'll let you go.
How about you kiss my ass?
Watch out, evildoers. There's nowhere to run. Because this year, they're all around you. The League is unlimited. All-new original series, starring every superhero worth cheering for. And then some. Justice League Unlimited.
Where am I exactly?
Among friends.
There's strength in numbers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 277 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, as he always is, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, we are continuing here. It's a big month for the podcast. You know that? We didn't really hype it up as much as we should have, but a lot of stuff, a lot of cool stuff within the last couple weeks that has happened and continues to happen. This past week, we celebrated birthdays for both Superman the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series. We had a great interview with writer Len Yulee. We dropped some bonus episodes. Batman the Avengers continues winding down, but got pushed to October, so we're not talking about that today. But and we are in what is arguably the right in the middle of the cream of the crop of the best DCAU episodes of all time, certainly the most highly praised and widely regarded as such. Welcome to episode 277 of the DCAU Review.
Absolutely, as you mentioned, a lot of fun stuff. Yeah, really really hope people listen to that that Len Yulee episode. We had a great deal of fun recording it ourselves, as we said at the time, and I think Len was pretty happy with it as well. Yeah, I just think it's a fascinating conversation. So if you haven't heard that one yet, we definitely encourage you to do so. But that's all out of the way. We're here, of course, to talk about, as you said, the next part of this grand finale of the Cadmus saga of Justice League Unlimited. And the next part of it is entitled Panic in the Sky.
That is right, Liam. And we, as we continue here, we, of course, as we have with each of our 276 prior reviews, we'll be tackling our four categories here in just a second. And this episode is no different in that way. But in the same way that we have done for many, if not all of our episodes, we are going to get the official Internet Movie Database synopsis, the IMDb synopsis for this week's episode in just a moment. But before we do, we must remind you that this segment is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today, and you'll get a collection of wonderful podcasts talking all about the DC Animated Universe. If you love Batman the Animated Series, which is probably why you're listening to this podcast, or any of the other DC Animated shows, and you love podcasts, well, we have the perfect place for you to go. Again, that's youtube.com/The Pod Tower. You get a wonderful podcast called Jump on the Batwagon with James from The Watchtower, with his good friend as he introduces him to the DCAU. You have the entire Tim Talk catalog up there, and you also have, get this, the entirety of what I think is the greatest DC Animated Universe podcast of all time. A little show called the DCAU Review also calls its home there. All in one convenient place right on YouTube. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower and subscribe today. Liam, this episode originally aired on the Cartoon Network here in the States, at least back on July the 9th, 2005, meaning we just passed the 18-year anniversary of this episode's debut.
That's right. So this is the synopsis in the sky, which was written by Dwayne McDuffie and directed by Dan Reba, secret friend of the show, music by Dynamic Music Partners, and animation by DR Movie Co. And that synopsis reads as such. While the senior leaguers struggle to respond to the mysterious main gun firing, Amanda Waller orders Galatea to lead a full attack on the Justice League.
Did it just say the mysterious main gun?
The mysterious main... While the senior leaguers struggle to respond to the mysterious main gun firing.
Oh.
They don't call it the main gun at any point.
Yeah, what is the main...
Or you could say... Yeah, you could say the Watchtower's
fusion reactor. That's what
they call fusion reactor or space laser, which I think is what Amanda Waller calls it in the episode.
I don't like the main gun and the poor choice of wording there. So a couple points off for that. Everything else, I think.
Also, it would be like the gun's mysterious firing. I feel like would be clearer sentence.
Proper
after class.
Yeah. Not your best work there. IMDb synopsis. Not your worst. But
definitely not.
definitely not. Definitely need some improvement, though. But yes, we will kick things off with a recap, of course, of last week's episode. That's how our episode starts. We get a nice little previously on Justice League Unlimited as we recap everything that happened last week. And rather than bore you with those details, we're going to encourage you to head back in the archives. I don't know why you'd be listening to this episode before you listen to last week's episode. But hey, some people like to live their life on the edge and do wacky things. So go back and listen to our review of that episode in the archives from last week if you want to hear everything that happened on that episode. But we kick things off right where we left off. Of course, the cliffhanger was the reveal that Galatea is back and she is at full strength. And she is about to lead what appears to be a direct attack, courtesy of Amanda Waller, right on the Justice League. No details kind of given as to where, how, why, and when. But well, we know the why, the where, and the when. I guess is left up up in the air as we left with that cliffhanger. But we see Professor Hamilton is installing a communication device into Galatea's brain, and we get about what feels like 2.5 minutes of exposition from old Lime Hamilton here, as he's given a lot of exposition as to how she's going to control this army of Ulta men and women, but mostly Ulta men is what they're called, Ulta men. Mm-hmm. How she's going to control them, how they're impervious to pain. They don't feel anything. They also don't have any active thoughts. So it's basically their way of explaining to you that this is a mindless CGI army that is about to be attacking the Justice League. So if you see any death occur, don't worry. There's no consequences to pain being inflicted on these people or them.
Hold still, Galatea. You're invulnerable. This can't possibly be hurting you.
Boredom is my kryptonite. Okay, actually, kryptonite is my kryptonite, but you know what I mean. Although the way I'm feeling lately, I don't think even that stuff can hurt me anymore.
Think again. I've artificially aged your body to its physical prime, but your underlying DNA matrix is still a clone of Supergirl's.
I'm better than she ever was.
Be careful with that. It gives you remote control over the Ultimen. The new generation of Ultimen are blank slates. They don't think except to follow your commands. They have no initiative and they feel no pain. When this light is on, the Ultimen are in puppet mode. They are little more than an extension of your will.
Wicked.
It's time we got the show on the road. Report to the staging area.
That's right. And they have their own Phantom Menace off switch. So
that's right. Exactly. So this thing on her brain controls them and allows her to communicate to them. And basically all she has to do is think and they'll do whatever she wants. So we learn that she is ready to go on this mission and she's seemingly very excited. We do get a very weird awkward moment where we kind of reveals the nature of Galatea and Lyme Hamilton's relationship as we see that she sees him as a father figure, seeing as how he created her in the lab. So she bids him adieu, gives him a warm hug, and kind of leaves him standing there. And believe it or not, this is the last time, at least according to the DCAU wiki, that we ever see old Lyme hanging around. So Lyme's sad goodbye here is a due from all of us and Galatea to Lyme.
Good. Rest in piss.
Well, I guess he does pop back up later in this episode.
This is
his swan song here. But yes, as Waller shows up, and she lets her know that it's time to go. And we cut to the watchtower where, as they're still kind of dealing with the repercussions of the cannon firing from last episode, the power is still out. They're working to get things back online and doing so as quickly as possible. They're able to get a one-way communication with the Flash, who gives the Justice Leaguers a bit of an update on how things are down on the ground. Superman's glad to hear that things are improving, but is also disheartened when he hears the Flash talking about how the people are beginning to blame the Justice League, that they're not too happy with them and see them as the reason why the destruction occurred. We also get a throwaway line, I believe, thrown in here, or might be in the news report that comes next, that no civilians were actually injured. So nobody died, just big holes everywhere. And I think the DCAU wiki made a point of saying that the late, great Dwayne McDuffie said that was a S&P mandate from the fine folks at Cartoon Network, that he had to make sure that it was clear that no one died, because no one ever dies in cartoons. You can't have death. And if this was like a sitcom, you would cut to the scene of Galatea that we're going to get to later on. But that's neither here nor here. Here nor there. But yes, as Superman begins talking to him, they get additional resources back online. They get one cable news station, apparently, and Superman comes to the realization that many, if not all of us, have, and that is that cable news sucks.
Long-range communications back online, at least.
How long before you can restore full power?
Adam's still down in the reactor room working on it. He thinks he can shave 20 minutes off the system reboot.
Hello? Hello? Is this thing on?
It is now. Go ahead, Flash.
The evacuation's going okay. Lots of minor injuries, but no casualties.
They were fortunate.
That's not how they see it. They're pretty mad. They think it's our fault, John.
Do what you can to keep a lid on things. I'll send additional help.
I wouldn't. They're scared of us as it is. If we can help it, we should try not to look like an invading army, you know?
Agreed. Keep me updated.
Continuing coverage live from Covenant, New Mexico, where a huge explosion has caused tremors detected as far away as Japan. Although many agree that in the instance before the explosion, they saw an energy beam strike from the sky.
Turn it off.
Our sensors are still out. This is the only information available.
Diana, John, Shaira, meet me in the main conference room. Now. You too, John.
It's just the worst. And as they're reporting not only the destruction that occurred because of the blast that landed right on Earth, but also that the Justice Leaguers are rumored to be the cause of that, and that people are upset and angry. So cable news doing what it does best, Liam, stirring the pot and trying to create division between everybody. Who would have predicted?
Again, they say the Simpsons was prescient, but cable news was a bit of a blight on the world even back in when these cartoons originally debuting, unfortunately. But yes, as Superman hears the report, he's frustrated by the words and decides to call a meeting with the remaining members of the Justice League that are still on the Watchtower. Of course, as mentioned, the Flash and Batman not present, but he calls the meeting. And it's kind of this little bit of a come to Jesus moment for Superman here, as he realizes that whatever their intentions have been this whole time, people are afraid of them, and there needs to be something done to show that there is still justice, that there is still due process, and that nobody, not even Superman, is above the law. And so at the behest of Wonder Woman, who suggests making a couple of shows of good faith, They decide that they are going to, one, pledge to decommission the fusion reactor laser space cannon, and two, they decide they're going to turn themselves into custody. And we find that out as they make a speech to the rest of the Watchtower, and that they have to do this, and that that they instruct the rest of the League who's staying behind to make sure that they are cooperating with the government fully. All be over soon, and they just need to make a show of good faith to make sure that that people are not so afraid of them. And we have like an immediate cut. We'll talk about this maybe. And this is more of a visual note, but the immediate cut from that to the Justice Leaguers in a javelin flying to Earth to turn themselves in, and you hear Batman just shout, "You want me to do what?" A great bit of just like the timing on the cut of the scene is just so perfect in that moment.
May I have your attention, please? I have an announcement to make. Until it's been proven that we aren't responsible for the tragedy in New Mexico, the founding members are turning ourselves into U.S. custody.
What?
Absolutely not. That's insane.
No, you can't
especially
do that. Now.
You can't.
No, don't do it.
Cooperate fully with the investigation. Give them whatever they ask for.
But Clark, Superman.
Hold the fort, Kara. We're counting on you. All of you.
You want me to what?
Turn yourself over into U.S. custody, along with the rest of us.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Meet us at the coordinates I'm sending first. We should all go over together.
This is the single dumbest plan I've ever heard. If you're feeling guilty, clear your own name. Don't stand on the sidelines waiting for somebody else to do it.
We've already voted. 5 in favor.
6.
You have to come with us, Bruce.
I don't have to do anything. I'm a part-timer, remember?
Actually, he took it a lot better than I'd expected.
But yes, Batman, unenthused at that idea, though the Flash agrees, then Batman ultimately decides he's not going to go with it. And he tells the Justice League that if they're feeling guilty, then they need to clear their own names and not wait for someone else to do with it. Not wait for someone else to do it. So we do, in fact, see the 6 original Justice Leaguers, as Batman also reminds everyone that he's a part-timer, mm-hmm. which... for the sake of the canon of Batman Beyond, it's important that he reiterates that once a season or so, I guess.
Yeah, you know, you got to keep everything straight. Dwayne, I mean, we laugh about it, but Dwayne McDuffie, part of the brilliance of Dwayne McDuffie and why he is in some ways, and one of the many ways that he sorely missed, was his attention to detail with all the intricacies of the canon of the DCAU and paying attention to things and linking things together and making sure that it was, you know, it stayed congruent as we mm-hmm. go along here. So both backwards and forwards. So yes, that's it's not an accident that he included that line in this episode, in an episode written by him, that make sure to drive home that fact that an episode 6 years or 5 years before this mentioned that Batman was only a part-timer.
That's right. So as they sort of break away, as mentioned, the Justice League turns themselves in to the government, and after some discussions with the soldiers who try to cuff them, I guess it's a warden. I don't know. Who is this guy?
They don't make it. I thought that it, I don't know, maybe it was like a Golden or Silver Age character that no one has like pulled the reference out of, or maybe it was somebody, it clearly is meant to be somebody, right? It's dude's right. Mustache. He's got white hair. Like, who's this character model based off of? Not sure. DCAU Wiki already had a lot of misinformation, so can't trust it, but also didn't have any information about that I saw.
That's not true. Maybe we'll try to check in with secret friend of the show, Dan Reba, and see uh-huh. if he has any recollection, if that was based on someone. We'll get back to you on that one perhaps next week, but yes, the Justice League turn themselves in. The warden, I guess he is, decides not to cuff the League and sort of notes that it probably wouldn't hold them anyway, so what's the point? So we cut back to the Watchtower, and there's this really nice kind of calm before the storm moment. We'll certainly talk more about this in voice acting, but where Supergirl Kara is really sort of just concerned over how all of this has gone, and doesn't believe that Superman and the rest of the league are doing the right thing, because she can't fathom that anyone would truly believe. Steel kind of there as the wise ally is there to sort of explain to her that it's not just about whether you're guilty or innocent. It's about how the public perceives you, and we're here to help. And so it matters. And that's why he kind of goes into a speech about how those original seven members of the Justice League are the best ever because of the example they set in every way, not just in punching the right bad guys. So as they have this heart to heart, it's immediately interrupted by a bunch of missiles flying towards the watchtower. They're not nukes, though. They have little drills on the front of them. Steel very quickly identifies it as LexCorp technology, which I will give the DCAU Wiki credit. This makes sense because Steel used to work for LexCorp, so he would recognize this, would recognize LexCorp technology right off the bat. But yes, sure. The Ultimen and Galatea have arrived. And the fighting is on as Galatea instructs the Ultimen to keep the rest of the league off of her, as she has a more specific mission besides just getting into a punch up with the various Justice League members. So that's like most of it's not the whole episode. There's a little bit of a subplot here with Waller and Batman, but most of the rest of the episode is punching. So we'll certainly talk more about that in visuals, but yes, we see lots of leaguers that we never get to see in action. Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. We'll certainly talk more about that. But yes, as the battle continues, we cut to Cadmus and we see Amanda Waller is watching progress of the attack when Batman breaks in.
We've got business, Waller. You told me once that you were a patriot. Well, it's time to step up. You have to know that the Justice League would never have fired that weapon at you.
Sure you would. It was retaliation for kidnapping your man, the Question.
And yet you weren't home. We've had you under surveillance for months. You don't think we saw you evacuate your offices?
A warning shot, then.
Don't be dense. Someone took over our fusion cannon by remote control. There are maybe three people on Earth smart enough to pull that off. Two of them were already on the watchtower, and that leaves...
Luthor. That's where you're trying to lead me, right?
You're too smart to trust him.
Who says I do? He provides off-the-books funding for Cadmus. Far as I'm concerned, that's all he's good for.
Then you must know he's got his own agenda.
He wants to be president. That's agenda enough for anybody.
Almost anybody. If I were you, I'd start looking at him. Hard.
And he appears, he knocks out General Eiling and tells her that she has to be smart enough to know that the League would not have had fired on Cadmus, especially considering that they'd had them under surveillance for months, and if they were trying to fire on them, they wouldn't have done it on an empty building. So he instructs her to maybe look a little bit closer at Lex Luthor, of course, who Amanda Waller is, I guess, dumb enough to believe would just be providing funding for them with no ulterior motives, and tells her to look into it a little bit deeper as he disappears for the rest of this episode.
That's right. Well, he does come back, but that's a little later on. But...
Yes.
Yes, he does. It does leave not only General Eiling, who struggles to get up after taking a closed fist to the jaw, as you mentioned, but does leave Waller a bit concerned as to how she may have been so blind to see Lex. We see her kind of unraveling that a little bit later in the episode. We cut back. As you mentioned, it's a pretty long fight that happens. Lots of action between our, second, third, fourth, fifth tier leaguers getting some action. It feels like this episode was designed just to have fun with a lot of these B, C, and D list heroes in action, which is perfectly fine. You have all these characters on the ship, so why not kind of feature some of them, especially I think we mentioned it briefly last week, but the general assumption was that this would likely be the final season for this show. Mm-hmm. So you didn't didn't have the foresight to know that you would have additional opportunities to do these sort of pairings and feature episodes that you ended up doing in Justice League Unlimited season 3. So, hey, why not throw all your action figures in a bucket and shake it up and see what happens? You know, that's kind of what the scene ends up being. As you mentioned, though, as Galatea had led this army of Ultimen, it does appear that the Ultimen, or the fake Ultimen, the clone Ultimen, I don't know what you call them, the android, they're not androids. I guess they're clones, right?
So they're just clones with no mind of their own, as we find out.
Mindless clones. That's
drones,
right.
If you will.
Drones. Yeah, that's a good. So the drones are, while they're doing some damage, it's clear that the Justice League is no match for them as they continue to, or there is a match for them, and they're able to kind of take them down pretty easily. And but we cut to
Steel announces that he's going to go check out the reactor as there's something going wrong, and they haven't been able to make contact with the Atom, who is down there trying to get it set to turn back on. So Steel goes off on his own to investigate while Kara keeps fighting the good fight on the bridge.
That's right. So Kara does do her job. I love the juxtaposition. We'll talk about this, or I'll talk about it now, but I love the idea that as they're surrendering, the Justice League decides to surrender. Kara is the biggest, the most vocal member saying that they shouldn't have to do this, other than maybe Batman, but saying that they shouldn't do this, they don't have to do this, they're the heroes. And Superman gives her a vote of confidence, saying that he looks to her to sort of hold things down, which I love that, because that's also, speaking of callbacks, it's very much to me in line with how she took care of Metropolis when Superman was out during mm-hmm. the happenings of Legacy. Like, she's the one who held everything together, which ultimately led to Galatea's creation. So you're tying yeah. everything all together here. So you know, she's really kind of taking the lead here with Steel on making sure that things are as under control as possible. And when she notices that the power still isn't back up, decides to go investigate the reactor itself. And on the way down, she finds an unconscious Atom. Poor Atom. She just picks him up and just like lays him back down again to get trampled by somebody. It's like, couldn't you just like sit him on a table or something? He's in this shrunken state. Somebody's got to walk on him. But no, she lays him right back on the ground.
A little shelf or something.
I know. Someplace out of the way where he's not going to get stepped on by freaking Atom Smasher or something. It's stumbling down the hallway. But as she continues to the reactor room, she hears a loud fight happening. And of course, it is Galatea who is, boy, she is cleaning Steel's clock. She is and having fun. She's playing with her food, so to speak. She just decimated him. You know, his entire suit is destroyed, ripped open. She's about ready to kill him, it seems. And then Supergirl busts in and decides that it's her turn to go one-on-one with Galatea in the rematch that we've been waiting for quite some time here. And those two go out at it, and it's very clear that Galatea does have the upper hand, as we know that she's the genetically sped up or matured version of Supergirl. So she is stronger. She's a little bit more agile, it seems. She's certainly gifted with more strength than Supergirl is. And she's kind of handling Supergirl pretty well, kind of putting her through the ringer. And it seems like she's about ready to destroy Supergirl. But then Supergirl mentions, pulls out the old mind games. And that's kind of something that you have to do when you're outmatched via the fist. Sometimes you got to play those mind games, it seems. And she does it well. She taunts her and says that deep down, she's never going to be anything. She'll never be a real girl. She pulls the Pinocchio card on her. You'll never be a real girl. You'll never be real. You're just something that was created in a Petri dish by Emil Hamilton. And when she invokes Hamilton's name, it seems to greatly enrage Galatea at that point.
Uh-oh. What's wrong, hero? Not strong enough? Maybe that's because I'm the real hero here. Your Justice League is a bunch of dangerous loose cannons, and I'm going to shut you down. Who do you think you're kidding? You don't care about what the League does? Admit it, you just want to beat me. I've already already beaten you, but I'm going to make it last. You know what? No matter how bad you beat me, I'm real, not a clone.
Shut up.
Deep down, you know the truth. You're not a person. You're just a weapon, grown out of one of Hamilton's petri dishes.
Shut up!
She's actually interrupted right before she's about to kill Supergirl, as it appears that Waller has, as we cut back to this, to her in the facility speaking with both Eiling and Hamilton. She's doing her own research and sees the equipment that Lex has had delivered to his facility where he's holed up. And she kind of is questioning whether or not it's enough material that could have created a device that could have taken over the watchtower. And Emil Hamilton confirms it, but he says that seems to be the least of his worries, as he also notices something else within the plans there and seems to declare that he knows exactly what Lex is up to. As we cut back to the fight between Supergirl and Galatea, and again, things are looking poor for Supergirl. The verbal spats continue, and just as Galatea is about to strike, Steel shouts out and notices that the reactor is about to power up within the next 30 seconds or so. So Supergirl really just has to hold out for a minute or two, well, less than a minute. And she's able to do so. And just as the reactor is powering back on, she's able to escape, grab one of the cords, and stick it directly onto Galatea's chest, which causes a giant electrocution. She then kind of pushes her into one of the other power cells, and that also continues to electrocute her. We cut back up to the bridge where the power to the watchtower goes back on for a moment and then immediately cuts off. And I have never felt a more relatable moment. It's like when you're sitting in your house after your power's been out for a long time, mm-hmm. Power comes back on and you're like, yes, it's back. And then, it's back off again. It was
tremendous, tremendous comedy. And
really good. Relatable. But yes, and then we cut back down as the leaguers from the bridge are call back down to the reactor room asking if a fuse was blown, and Supergirl responds that yeah, something like that.
When I get rid of you, I'll be the only.
Somebody blow a fuse down there?
I'll say.
And we cut to this rather gruesome image of a fried Galatea who's sitting there on the floor of the watchtower, twitching. And as Supergirl helps Steel up, and they go back up to the surface. And that's where we kind of get our final part of this episode. You think that might be the final part of the episode, but we cut to Lex working in his lab, and he's giving what I like to call Lex position. He's given a whole lot of Lex Luthor exposition here, explaining what his plan was and how he's linked everything together with Professor Ivo's Amazo robot. He's built himself his own Amazo robot where he's going to download his consciousness so that he can be immortal.
Now you're perfect. A perfect, super powerful, immortal body. A suitable place for me to spend the rest of eternity.
Ironic. Years of plotting, hundreds of millions spent on Cadmus R&D projects, and none of it bore fruit. No. It's a lowly employee of LexCorp, Dr. Ivo, creator of Amazo, who we have to thank for my impending godhood.
That was the last piece I needed.
Got it all figured out, have you?
When you and Adam worked together to stop the first Amazo, he showed you the blueprints. And I suspect you have a photographic memory.
I'm too modest to boast.
The real purpose of Cadmus was to give you superpowers.
And to ruin Superman's reputation. Imagine how sweet it will be when I save the world from the menace of the Justice League.
Now, when I kill Superman, they'll build statues in my honor.
Maybe next time.
That was uncalled.
And then Batman breaks in, or has been standing there the whole time, is able to fit
maybe
the last...
Maybe he was just talking to Batman. Maybe he knew he was there the whole time.
I mean, maybe. Once we kind of learn who was actually talking, maybe it's possible his consciousness knew that the Batman was there. But Batman says it's the final piece of the puzzle that he had to kind of put together to figure out what exactly was going on. Luthor was up to everything enough to distract the League so that he could finish his robot. He needed to build his robot body. And as Batman figures it out and says that pretty much this is over, he's ending it, he's pulling the plug, he throws an exploding batarang right at the shell, which looks like a mazo but has Lex Luthor's face. I think
he's so vain. Like, that's such a funny note that he's like, it still has to look like me. It's important that it still has my face.
So great. So he throws an exploding batarang at it, and right before impact, Luthor's hand magically jumps up and catches it, and it apparently feels no pain, catches the exploding batarang. Batman seems to be a bit caught off guard, and then begins an attempt to take down Luthor with his fists. Luthor absorbs a bunch of the blows and seems to be handling Batman pretty well. He then hurls Batman across the room and out the window of LexCorp. Batman is falling. He shoots a bat grapple, which bounces off the side of LexCorp. I love that. Maybe I'd like to think in my headcanon that Lex had it like bat grapple proofed.
Like, yeah, I like to think after the events of Batman breaking into his bedroom in World Bound, he's like, every building I am in for the rest of my life will not allow a grappling hook to attach to it.
Right, super high density, smooth, like coating that he put on the concrete or something that prevented a bat grapple from being able to penetrate. But sure. Batman appears to be falling to his doom and is caught at the very last second. We flash back to the room where Lex is, and well, he's ready to download his consciousness, but not so fast. The heroes are here to save the day. Well, heroes, question mark, or at least Amanda Waller.
Hey, Lex, that android is Cadmus' property. You're going to have to find somewhere else to keep your brain. A nano-disassembler beam. Your design, I believe.
Arrogant cow! It'll take weeks to build myself another android body.
You ain't got weeks, Baldy. You're under arrest for trying to use the Justice League's space gun to murder everyone at Cadmus.
Did you really think you could take me down all by yourself?
Actually, yeah. But on the off chance, I might have been wrong.
Ta-da!
It's over, Lex.
That's right. So she, we see her very quickly establish herself with a big freaking cannon attached to her chest or hip or whatever, and fires it. And the eagle-eyed viewers will notice as she explains that this is a smaller version of the weapon that that Lex and the Atom attempted to build to stop Amazo in the episode The Return. And Lex is furious and attacks her very quickly. And sort of begins to gloat over her, saying that, you know, how could you have possibly thought that you could have stopped me by yourself? And Amanda Waller says she did think she could stop her by herself. Great, great line. But just in case she was wrong, she took a pit stop to pick up a few helpers. And we turn around to see the original seven members of the Justice League standing loud and proud, Batman with them. He's a full timer in his heart. And and as Superman begins to make the declaration that it's over, it's getting what is it's hard to put yourself back in the mind of someone who didn't know this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
But this has to be like, what a freaking bonkers twist this late in this season. And we might discuss this a little bit later. There was I think there's a featurette on the DVDs, and I assume it's still there for the Blu-ray version, where they discussed this storyline in depth. And I think originally the idea was Lex was just going to put himself in the Amazel. And then they decided not to go that route. So they needed something else. And so what should happen? But Lex's body begins to change and morph, and black tentacles begin shooting out of his skin and ripping his skin and bones apart. And we slowly see his midsection part. We see sort of a skull-like face with two red eyes, and then three dots form on Lex's chest as we hear a very familiar voice say that he had hoped to remain dormant until he was installed into the android, but the Justice League has forced his hand.
Not until I... I'd hoped to remain hidden until I could install myself into the android. But you forced my hand.
Brainiac.
Laying dormant inside Lex Luthor for how long, we'll find out next week, is none other than Brainiac. And that's cliffhanger for this week.
Yeah, bonkers, I think, is the exact word that I would use, especially when you think about, like, this was going to be how this series pretty much wrapped up, right? Like, this was going to be the end of this thing. There wasn't much left after this. And, well, here we are. So all the way from how this started, which, okay, you want to call Man-Bat's not exactly grounded in reality, but like, okay, it's a monster movie type thing, but you know, from that to Superman's human arch nemesis is possessed by a Kryptonian robot, that's where we go.
Yes, that's our big cliffhanger, is the Lexbot, if you will, is standing before the Justice League, and that's where we wrap it up. Yeah, this is a wild way to end it. We'll get into maybe our thoughts on the ending in a second. Overall, as we get towards our scores here, as we wrapped up the recap, this episode we talked about last week was juggling a lot and chose to do a lot more talking than punching.
Mm-hmm.
This week's kind of the opposite. It's mostly punching. Which is fine, because it's, as we'll talk about in visuals in a moment, it's great punching. But I just, it's, so it's hard to really gauge this as a plot. Like the big elements are, you know, there's a big fight. Batman, you know, gives Waller the enough of a seed of doubt so that she starts investigating Lex and finds out that he's been stealing technology from Cadmus, and then Batman and her go to confront them, and that's the thing. And their other through line, which I kind of wish, maybe I think it gets enough, but maybe you could have even done, is the Supergirl Galatea rematch.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like that kind of becomes the main portion of the episode. As far as the Justice Leaguers on the Watchtower goes, that's really the story beats there, is Supergirl, as you said, kind of stepping up even further than we've ever seen her before as kind of the leader of the remaining Leaguers that are on the Watchtower, and then having to sort of face her fear and take on her evil twin, literally.
Mm-hmm.
in one-on-one once again, with everything on the line as she's trying to set off the nuclear reactor and blow up the entire Watchtower to kill all of them. So the stakes quite literally have almost never been higher in this episode for our heroes. So, but yeah, because it's so action heavy, I don't know how to grade this in and of itself, because obviously, as we talked about, it's one big arc, but Question Authority through, I would say, Divided We Fall is like, it's almost one episode. Like, right, that's why you have instead of doing like a, you know, in episode recap, you literally just do the previously on before the credits. So, yeah, like it's good. It's juggling a lot. And then, boy, like I said, just coming back to this And we'll talk about it next week. In next week's episodes, we do get some explanation. They explain the how and the where and the why of how Brainiac has been laying dormant inside Lex Luthor for so long. But boy, what a wild way to end our episode here. It feels like everything's getting wrapped up with a nice bow, and then we just get thrown a curveball and another cliffhanger.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think if this was one episode, let's say it was formatted, and they, like you said, they kind of are. Like, it's part one, part two. So if you look at last week as part one, and then let's say this was the old format of the Justice League, where you played both parts on the same night or whatever, or if you watched both of them together, if we reviewed them both together, I think it would be a little bit different, because you would have the action sequences kind of sandwiched. We talked last week how the main and really only action of the piece came from that fight between Captain Atom and Superman. And then this part, you have the latter third act is pretty much all punching and kicking. And then you have another sort of smaller fight scene between Superman or between Batman and Lex Luthor. So you do have a little bit of action there towards the end, and then is the insane reveal. So I think all of that would have fit together if this was literally aired together. It wasn't aired together. It's not part one and part two. It's two different episodes. They're classified that way, even though it's the same arc. But all of that said, this episode does heavily rely on the action part. It is mostly made up of the action sequence of the fight in space, which is fine. It feels to me more like an adapted comic book in a way, like, because it is so much heavy action and the fighting that occurs in between, and then you have that crazy, bonkers, ridiculous reveal at the end that would just be like a full page, full color splash page at the end reveal of Lex as the Brainiac bot, right? And you'd have the Justice Leaguers gasping around him, and then you'd be like, next issue, like, secrets of the Lex bot revealed. But it's not. It's a cartoon, and it does feel like a really strong left turn away from what we talked about has been sort of the theme here. And yes, those threads are still picked up on. There's still things that are talked about here, but because we went last week where we had these two vying opinions of what steps people need to take, and you had Superman acting very out of character, but we talked about why he was acting out of character and what that representative, and you had the two sides of the coins of both the government and the Justice League figuring out how they're going to react to one another or act towards one another, and who's going to take the first shot, and kind of both holding these weapons up but not knowing who's going to blink first. This week feels very, very different. It feels more like a comic book. That other stuff, that espionage and all that sort of cloak and dagger and the underlying storyline of the Cadmus arc kind of seemed to have taken a break for this episode. Yeah, there's still some threads that are touched on, but I think as soon as the Justice League decides that they're gonna surrender, it kind of just feels like another Justice League episode. So that felt a little bit different. And I know we talked last week briefly that there was some talk of kind of lengthening this storyline a little bit, where having, you know, some of the Leaguers break off and do other things, and maybe it would expand beyond the four stories here, but they ended up just kind of doing the four story arc instead. So maybe that's why, and maybe last week's episode wasn't received as well as one would hope. So they're like, hey, we got to get back on brand and do action stuff. We can't do this dialogue plot driven stuff every single week. We're still a children's cartoon, so we got to have guys fighting and punching each other. So maybe that was just the take that we decided to do. Again, it's not a bad episode. I think the most entertaining stuff is certainly the follow-up on the Galatea versus Supergirl stuff. That is certainly a plot that drives the episode, but it feels like we're so far removed from that because that was way, way, way back there before we kind of started this, that it doesn't it didn't feel directly connected in a way that I think maybe I would have hoped it would. So again, it's a fine episode. I know what it, we know that it, with the benefit of hindsight, what it's setting up. We know that a lot of the loose ends and the what does are covered in next week. So we'll get some answers and be able to talk about that there. But as far as the plot for this week, it certainly relied more on the action than an actual plot for the story. But the Supergirl stuff was still interesting enough for me to give it a 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it the exact same score. I think it's still good, solid, and it is fun, and it's fine, like you said, to have a more action-packed episode. I do think it would have been nice, given that original episode with Galatea, Fearful Symmetry, that episode focused around the trio of Green Arrow, The Question, and Supergirl investigating. And it's like Green Arrow's on Earth, doesn't speak in this episode. The Question is in the Watchtower, but he doesn't speak.
Right.
So we're relying on, you know, Kara having a heart-to-heart with Steel. And it feels like maybe in a different... There's maybe a way you could have worked it back to her, you know, her meeting back up with Question, at least, since Green Arrow is not there. Again, this is just me spitballing, ideas. That's something that came out 20 years ago, but something that felt a little more personal or more directly connected back to this episode or to that original episode.
Sure.
Because that is such a strong kind of opening point for this main Cadmus arc to get started. But yeah, it's still fun. And like you said, you get to play off, you get to end, you get to have the rematch of Supergirl and Galatea, and then lots of fun action. And then, like we said, just a wild, wild twist ending, to end the episode to propel us towards next week. So 7 out of 10 for me as well. If I didn't already say it, I think it's good. It gets the job done. It gets us from point A to point B with lots of fun along the way, but not maybe as narratively strong as compared to last week.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is animation and visuals. And as you mentioned at the top, DR Movie Co. responsible for this week's episode, directed by Dan Reba, even though the DCAU wiki falsely says that it's Joaquin Bezos. Don't ever trust the DCAU wiki. Trust but verify.
When we're quoting directly from it.
Right, exactly. That's why we always say according to the DCAU wiki, because we don't want to.
That's right.
We're not taking credit for any mistakes or inconsistencies. Liam, right. DR Movie Co. I will mention at the top, part of the main fight scene revolves around these CGI missiles crashing into the Watchtower. Mm-hmm. And while I like the idea of them, I thought the design was cool. I like that the head is actually a secret sneaky drill that allows that encapsulates these Ultimen armies that pop off. And once they're inside, I thought those designs were cool, but boy, does that take me out of that scene, because there's so many great action sequences directly. There's this one shot as the missiles are impacting. They show Red Tornado helping a trio of expendable crew members, perhaps. They're looking out sort of this giant window as the missile comes in, and he grabs a couple of them and jumps out of the way just as the impact, the missile impacts. And I was like, man, that would look so good if it didn't have this computer generated non-cell shaded version of this very clearly non-traditional animation missile here. That's my main critique. That's the main thing that I didn't like. You can check out the DCAU wiki's inconsistencies and goofs section if you really want to get down to it. Before we get into our critique of the visuals here, just for posterity's sake, I will mention the cast that appears during the fight here. You ready?
Ready.
All right. So we have Adam Smasher, Buona Beast, Black Canary, Blue Devil, Booster Gold, Captain Atom, Commander Steel, Creeper, Crimson Fox, Dr. Light, Dr. Midnight, a couple doctors on board, but no Dr. Fate, Fire, Green Arrow, Hawk, Hawk Girl, but of course we knew that already. Our Man, Ice, Metamorpho, Huntress, Obsidian, Question, that's a pretty obvious one, Red Tornado, The Ray, Shining Knight, Stargirl, Starman, Stripe, Vigilante, Wildcat, and then, of course, Sand also is in there.
And I believe you missed Aztec, but yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did miss Aztec. You can't forget Aztec. God.
The Ultimate Man or something, whatever his tagline was in that comic he had in the 90s.
That's right. Aztec.
It's probably good. It was written by Grant Morrison and Mark Miller. It's probably very good, but no one will ever know.
That's right. He will instead be known as the guy that I forgot to mention running down all of the holes here. What did you like about this episode, Liam? Anything that you didn't like?
Yeah, big fight. Big fight was awesome. Like it's hard to break it down because there's so much happening on the screen. We have our Ultimen, you know, just kind of there's constant kinetic movement all over the screen, both in the background and the foreground of this big watchtower fight the whole time. It's a lot of it's cool. Some of the ones that stood out, there's a moment where one of the Downpour, which is the water Wonder Twin Ultimen, attacks Stripe of Stargirl and Stripe fame, mm-hmm. and starts filling his suit, and we kind of see an inside shot of him in this big mech suit, and we see the water filling up, and it's like beginning to short out, and fuses are beginning to blow, and then we see Stargirl kind of come up from behind and knock Downpour out. So that's a fun one. There's a bit where Steel, who can apparently fire lasers out of his hammer now, does that, which looks really cool. And then the Black Vulcan stand-in, Juice, apparently, I don't remember them ever even saying his name mm-hmm. in the original episode, but Juice is apparently that character's name, and like turns himself into a lightning bolt. And then like rides the current of Steel's hammer laser blast and then shocks him in a big bolt of lightning. That's a really cool, that's really well done, well pulled off effect. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, as mentioned, we just have all these fun, wacky, like B and C and D leaguers, like Starman and Dr. Light and all of them just flying around and Wildcat. And I got really excited for some reason when the Creeper showed up, even though he didn't say anything. Like it was just like when the Creeper jumps down and headbutts one of them, I was like doing a fist pump. I thought that was there's some great deep cuts here as well. As you see some of the non-powered leaguers going against it. Atom Smasher going one-on-one with Long Shadow, hurling a javelin like a javelin at Long Shadow's chest. Really, really cool. And then, obviously we can get to the final fight between Supergirl and Galatea in a second here. But yeah, just so much is happening all the time on the screen. You have different Ultimen transforming into different animals. You got gorillas and dinosaurs and stuff going around, and water and tornadoes and all this crazy, all these different effects, different types of effects. Some of it's looks a little bit CG, some of it looks like traditional hand-drawn animation. It's just a lot's happening all the time, and it all looks really cool. For lack of I don't have a more efficient or more clever way to describe this whole watchtower brawl other than it's a hoot.
Yeah, it's nonstop action from beginning to end. Lots of things that we'll probably leave out if we try and break down every single interaction there. There's some good stuff with some of our female superheroes. We have Fire and Ice doing some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. We get Red Tornado gets a tornado off.
Oh, yeah. He's a much better tornado than the other tornado guys.
Yeah, agreed. Three wind dragons to go up against one Red Tornado, and still they were defeated by Red Tornado. So yeah,
and you even see like their body language changes, like they're exerting more and more, mm-hmm. and he just stands with his hand open the whole time. Yeah, it's a very cool way of showing off his power as well.
I love the one scene also where the expendable crewmen group are trapped in a closet and they're about to be overtaken by one of the Wonder Twins, and just before they do, they decide they're gonna go ahead and attack. I was like, this is great. Everybody's inspired to fight. They don't need the heroes to come save them. They're heroes in their own right. But yeah, there's lots of action. Oh, who could forget? Also, I would be remiss not to mention the Atom Smasher versus Long Shadow fight that we get. Also, is two giant, big, meaty men bumping meat. You know, just fighting each other, just smashing into one another. It's great. Yeah, so that whole battle's worth going out of your way to see it. If you don't rewatch the episode this week, go find a clip maybe on your favorite video streaming site and watch it there. I'm not giving any free plugs for you, YouTube. Not on my watch. But if you're on YouTube, while you're there, subscribe to the Pod Tower. You know, get your video podcast that way. The rest of the episode, there's a lot of talking that happens. I think we'd be remiss not to talk about probably the main event, which ends up talking about it next week also, but this is where it debuts. The Lex Brainiac hybrid, the aforementioned Lex tentacles and Brainiac stomach creature thing is just insane. Like, it's an insane drawing. Like, I feel like I don't know who's credited with creating the design, but it's horrifying. It's something right out of a horror movie. If the giant skeleton coming out of Lex's abs wasn't bad enough, the giant tentacles ripping out of where his hands should be, and then the Brainiac logo pumping out of his pectoral muscles, just absolutely disgusting. Like, just horrifying. Great job, person who designed him. The stuff of nightmares, for sure. He also gets super buff on top of it. Like, he grows like 2 feet taller because I guess he has leg tentacles too, and then he's also just super jacked now on top of it, and the like his skin is ripping around the tentacles, and he's got the tentacles coming out of his neck and his love handles and everything. It's just not appeasing to the eye. It's meant to make your skin crawl, and it does.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fantastic. And that final fight between Galatea and Supergirl is pretty, it's again as brutal as you can get on a TVG kids cartoon, as we've said. But first, it starts with him, she's like dragging steel by his face through like a computer panel when we see Galatea for the first the beginning of that scene, and then yeah, they have a fight, and Galatea is really getting the better of it of Kara for most of it until as mentioned, we finally get this moment at the end where she creates a circuit, so to speak, and fries her, and then yes, the aftermath of Galatea with all of her hair kind of burned and the steam coming off of her, and we see kind of the wound on her stomach where the live wire went in, so to speak. Not that one. It's a really, really dramatic ending. We'll talk about it. There's probably something to be said for the sound design of that moment as well. But just a really, really good finish to that big brawl. And as you mentioned, the visual comedy, as mentioned, of everybody throwing their hands in the air and cheering just for the lights to cut off again is a great bit as well.
Yeah. That's there's a lot. I think the main focus goes to that fight sequence, but subsequently the fight between Supergirl and Galatea, as you mentioned, the visual of the fried Galatea is not one that you'll get out of your head anytime soon, only to be replaced by terrifying Brainy Luther. That's the two horrible images that are just seared into my brain here for the rest of eternity. But overall, it's a solid episode, minus a couple points because of the computer generated non-cell shaded missile usage. Just makes it feel dated in a way that most of the other episodes aren't, as I've mentioned before. Ended up settling on a still pretty strong 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went just 1 point higher, a 9 out of 10. I think it's very, very solid. Just like I said, it's it's so much fun. It's the equivalent of getting all your, you know, when you're a kid, all your action figures, all of your Mattel Justice League Unlimited 3-pack purchased action figures, and doing a big knockdown drag out fight. It's just a lot of fun. So for that reason, I think, and I think the fight being inside the Watchtower is a lot of fun too. Like the setting is great. You know, as always, great work. We probably don't mention enough the work of the background designers and people like that who work on these shows as well. But yeah, just an awesome, awesome, big knockdown drag out superhero fight. And as you mentioned, we get our dessert is some body horror with Lex and Brainiac. So, yeah, pretty strong ending to the episode as well from a visual standpoint.
Agreed. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music, and it's our dynamic music partners back at it again, right? We have some interesting use of music. It's a lot of filler and background. Synthesizer mixes, but there were at least one to two moments that really stood out for me. I think I'll leave the one that is likely the top of your list to you, and I'll mention the surrender scene of the Justice League to the army. I'm thinking maybe it's just a riff on Colonel Sanders. I don't know. It's a guy with a white beard. Maybe he's a colonel in the army. It's Colonel Sanders. He doesn't have the full glasses and like bolo tie, but I'm just going to dub him Colonel Sanders until secret friends of the show prove otherwise. So when they're surrendering to the U.S. military, there's of course you have to, it's the U.S. military. You got to play some patriotic snare drum in the background, a marching beat that's occurring, as our javelin lands and the people escape. And we get this bit of dialogue where they're going to handcuff Superman for no reason at all. And the soldier gets shamed by Colonel Sanders there telling him, don't do that. It's not necessary, but we got that. I thought that scene was punctuated well because it is sort of a somber note on which the Justice Leaguers are surrendering. However, it sort of crescendos to a bit more heroic, albeit off key a little bit at the end, because it is sad, but it is showing that the Justice Leaguers in the end truly are heroes, and the way that their heroism is reflected can be in various different ways of their actions. So it could have been, they could have come down and try and save the day and look like the heroes, but they knew that that wasn't the most important way to appear in those moments. So what was the most thing to do but to humble themselves and surrender in the moment to really drive home the fact that they're willing to cooperate and do everything they can to show that they're not involved with this attack on Earth. So I really liked that. I thought that it kind of added to that sequence pretty well. The fight scene also has a just kind of generic background fight music, creating tension all the way up to the point where Galatea looks like she's about to get the victory, but then of course Supergirl gets the upper hand, punctuated by the electrocution and a crescendo of music there. But to me, I thought that the standout, Liam, has to be in our final scene. It's a pretty great moment of music.
Yeah, we do in fact get the auspicious return of the original Lolita Ritmanis penned Justice League theme, as it is revealed that the original seven are standing together, ready to help Amanda Waller arrest Lex. It's a great callback there, and the way it transitions into the horror movie like shrill strings once Lex's body starts exploding is also very, very well done and very neat as well. So yeah, the transitional music, I feel like, yes, you got your big action music, you've got your guitars, you've got some heavier drums, but I think the standouts are definitely that Justice League theme, and then the moment where Kara hits Galatea with the wire and then plugs her in, so to speak, and it's just this big shrill crescendo of music, also with like what sounds like a stock library scream. I feel like I've heard that in other shows and stuff before.
Not a Wilhelm scream, but like,
yes.
It's
used well though for this moment of just abject again, as violent as you can get it on a kid's TV show. And I thought the music played into that moment really well as well. And even kind of plays into the, again, the joke we keep talking about, but the music comes back up when the lights turn on and then immediately goes when the lights turn back out. It was very funny as well. So as usual, our dynamic music partners are playing their part and adding to some of these emotional beats, whether they be silly little comedic moments like that or the more serious and heroic moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think based on that Justice League theme moment alone, I thought that punctuated so well. I was so happy. The reveal that they're all the original seven are all there. And then that theme comes roaring in. Really, really love that. I ended up giving music a really strong 8 out of 10, just based on that, the fight scene, then the couple crescendos, as well as that little horror bit at the end is that we get the reveal of this terrifying transformation of Lex into Brainy Lex.
I also gave it an 8 out of 10 as well.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which is going to be voice acting. And of course, while we have many, many, many Justice Leaguers on screen, a lot of them, thankfully, for better or worse, don't talk. So we don't have a ton of voices to cover today. And we, of course, as is the case with a lot of these episodes, we have guys and girls pulling double, triple, quadruple duty with both credited and uncredited performances. Let's run down our entire voice cast and talk about the best of the best with our voice acting today.
That's right. So just very briefly, we have Robert Foxworth as Emil Hamilton's evil twin brother. he's fine. He's fine. I don't care for him, for his performance, but that's not his fault. That's just his voice.
Yep.
And I don't care for it, but that's all right. But thankfully, we have basically nothing else but home runs in this cast.
And Lime is gone, as we mentioned at the top.
That's right. He only has like two lines in the episode.
Never to return again.
That's right. But we do have playing the, as always, playing multiple voices, but playing briefly at the end, Brainiac, as well as the prison warden, is, of course, the great Corey Burton. I actually feel like it's been a little while since we've said his name. So.
Absolutely.
Fun to have him back in a brief role there, of course, paired alongside the ending scene there with Clancy Brown's Lex Luthor and, of course, CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller. We get to see a little bit more of them playing off of each other, which is a lot of fun. And, you get this feeling that Lex is becoming a bit more unhinged than maybe we've ever seen him before, even before we know there's an evil Kryptonian robot in his gut. So I think he's very good in that scene, and then I'll save. I think there's one person we need to save for last here, but and then as you mentioned, Cal, we have several of our original founding members of the Justice League. We have Carl Lumbly as the Martian Manhunter. We have Kevin Conroy as Batman. We have George Newbern as Superman. We have Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, who also plays the reporter, I believe, on the news report. We have Michael Rosenbaum as the Flash and Phil LaMarr playing three characters. He's got Stripe just briefly, and then he has Green Lantern. But really, I think his best work in this episode is as Steel. He kind of gives himself this kind of raspy, kind of soft-spoken voice. It doesn't really match what Michael Dorn was doing for Steel in the original animated series, but I do like his take on Steel, and as a very, a big point of difference as opposed to his John Stewart voice. Yeah, big shock that Phil LaMarr can do multiple voices, but considering they don't just ask him to say an exposition line or something, like he's actually got like some big emotional beats to deliver when he when he's kind of giving Kara the pep talk there. Him as Steel was kind of an unexpected highlight of this episode, I thought.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't there I feel like that there was a track on the DVDs for maybe this episode or one of the others where they talked about Phil LaMarr doing the Steel voice, and he said that he couldn't really do anything much different, but it was like his Morgan Freeman impersonation or something like
yes.
that.
I feel like it might be on The Return, because I think Steel's in that one as well.
Okay. Yeah.
But, But yeah, so in either that one or on that Cadmus featurette, yes, I definitely do remember them saying that that Phil Lamar was kind of basing this on Morgan Freeman.
Which I don't know that Mr. Lamar would win any Morgan Freeman impersonation contest based on if that is in fact, maybe it was just loosely based on Morgan Freeman. However, yeah, it is. I mean, his acting is incredible. His that pep talk that he has to give Supergirl to really drive home the fact that she needs to look to them, see them as, you know, why the original seven are the original seven, that this act of theirs being selfless and surrendering is an exhibition of why they are heroes and why their heroism goes beyond just saving the day from, you know, or doing the cleanup on Earth, why that sacrifice and that humility and all of that also plays into the fact of them setting the example for everybody else on the team. It's great. I really honestly wish they had brought back Mr. Dorn. It's not a knock on Mr. Lamar, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're huge fans. Longtime listeners know how much we love and respect Mr. Lamar's performances. But it's very hard to separate the Phil Lamar voice from Green Lantern, who's also in this episode. So it's a little bit distracting, I will say that. Mr. Lamar did an incredible job. What they asked of him was, a lot, and he did exactly what was asked of him and probably more. So it's not a knock on the performance. It's just, as we've talked about before, when you have voice actors who you're used to being in one singular role, your brain sometimes doesn't connect or isn't able to completely connect the dots to say, okay, this is this character and not the other character, or this is the same voice actor doing this, but it's a completely different character. It's just somewhat distracting in that way. So I wish they had cast, if they weren't able to bring back Mr. Dorn, they had cast anybody else to just kind of give that. But at the same time, maybe because of the posterity, having him in the return as Steel, and then obviously knowing that this particular scene is heart to heart between the two of them, required some good acting chops. They didn't just want to give it to anybody and bring anybody in to do it. So they relied on somebody they knew would be willing and able to kind of fill those shoes. So it is a good performance from Mr. Lamar. I just wish that it was anybody else, because it's the same guy that does the voice of the Green Lantern. So, you know, it's just a brain disconnect in that way, in my head, at least.
Absolutely. I think that's fair. He does have, like I said, despite his versatility as a performer, you can still absolutely tell that this is Phil Lamar the whole time. So yeah, I don't think that's wrong. I think it's that's a fair point.
It's just a personal taste. Like I
said, exactly.
It's not a knock on the actual, it's not an knock on the performance. It's just, it's the brain connecting to, like, this is a completely different character when Green Lantern is in the very next scene. And it's also the same voice.
Yes, absolutely. And as mentioned, Michael Dorn, the original voice actor for Steel in this universe, has a very distinct voice. Like, mm-hmm. And again, it's fine that Mr. Lamar didn't try to replicate. Very, very different. I remember even as a kid thinking about that, about how different it would sound sometimes when you didn't have that original voice actor back to voice the character when they popped back up. But we will move on from there to I think our main event, playing two roles in this episode, is of course the great Nicole Tom as both Supergirl and Galatea. And man, she's great in this episode. She's great in the quieter moments, like we just said, when she's, you know, she's not sure of herself. She's frustrated. She's angry. She's upset. And, you know, she doesn't want to believe, like we said, she doesn't want to believe that anyone believes that the Justice League is guilty. She still has a little bit of that naivete about her. And when we get to it, that anger kind of gives way into that anxiety, that anxiousness that she's feeling. And when she kind of opens herself up to Steel a little bit, and explains how concerned she is for Superman and everything, it's really great. And then her as the trash talking Galatea, who just has this very strange, like, it's very clear she has a chip on her shoulder, and it's very clear as Supergirl then goes on to exploit in the episode that she's she's compensating for something, right? Whatever she's doing is all tied back to the fact that she's sort of jealous of the life that she knows Kara. She has all of Kara's memories. She knows the life she's lived, you know, the love that she feels for whether it's Superman or the Kents or who or what have you, that she's never had. We see her kind of try to force that connection with Hamilton,
right,
in the episode. And so when it's kind of thrown back in her face near the end of the episode by Supergirl, it's this moment where she just really begins to come unglued. And, you know, she kind of has this very smug superiority about her that just completely goes away when Supergirl starts picking at her for being, you know, for not being a real girl, so to speak, for being, you know, Pinocchio realizing they're a puppet. Like it's like this moment she just completely loses it, and it's really, really well done. And the fact that it's one actor doing both of these parts, mm-hmm, and they're talking to each other for most of the, you know, the big dramatic moments of this episode. Just a phenomenal job by Ms. Tom this week.
Yeah. I mean, longtime listeners will know that's one of the things that I look to and I'm just blown away by over and over again. You know, whether it's, you know, when Kevin Conroy has to play off of himself and his Silicon Soul, or, you know, Tim Daly playing off of himself in the Bizarro episodes, or whatever, you know, whenever you get the same person playing either the same exact character or a variation of that character, and they're forced to interact with each other for the majority or the big portions of the scenes of the episode, boy, like, what a Herculean task to take on. And as you mentioned, like, there is this moment where Supergirl goes from this kind of this place of, it's not inferiority, but like she's not as confident. Galatea is clearly, mm-hmm, the confident one in the battle, feeling like she's going to take over things. And if you go back to Fearful Symmetry, that was the entire makeup of that thing. Galatea is this pompous, arrogant, sure of herself person that's going to destroy Supergirl. She's better than Supergirl, you know, in every single way. And then we get this switch here, as you mentioned, where Supergirl turns the tables and taunts her and reveals, actually, you've got daddy issues, like, quite literally. Like, he flips the script there, and it causes this unsettled nature to come out of Galatea, which then also causes you kind of have this flip in the way that they're talking. So now Supergirl's the confident one, and she's the one that's talking down to Galatea, and Galatea is starting to lose it a little bit. So she's becoming unhinged, and you have to kind of do that. So it's no surprise that, as according to the DCAU wiki, which I assume was probably on one of the accompanying bonus tracks for the DVDs, Bruce Timm talks about this being Nicole Tom's performance as being one of the best in the history of the DCAU. So high praise, as the Nick Cage meme goes, for Nicole Tom there, from one of the godfathers of the DCAU to. And we know about all of the performances over all of these different shows and how many incredible ones there were. So, I think it lives up to that based on just the depth, and then that sort of role reversal while also maintaining the differentiation between the characters. It's incredibly difficult. We always shout out Andrea Romano for her voice direction and, mm-hmm, and casting in these areas, because that's the person who's directing and suggesting maybe how these performances should go. So that's a quarter of the battle maybe, but, you know, the lion's share of trying to figure that out and interpret that in a really beautiful artistic way falls on the shoulders of the voice actor or actress. And in this case, Ms. Tom, I thought, did just a wonderful job. Really, really impressed by it. And felt like that really ended up carrying the load for the episode, and really is the standout, because we, as you mentioned, we have a large sequences where there isn't a whole lot of dialogue happening, a lot of fists flying, a lot of interesting images. You get the question beating people in the face with bedpans, Captain Atom returning, but you don't have a lot of talking going on there. So this is where that that, as well as her interaction with Mr. Lamar's steel, and her interaction with George Newbern's Superman in that little mm-hmm. brief conversation where she's coming to the realization of, you know, doesn't believe they should have to surrender, but is being looked to as the de facto leader while the other leaguers are gone is really important. So yeah, incredible job by Miss Tom, and ultimately why I ended up giving voice acting a really, really strong 9 out of 10.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually went a little bit higher. I went the full 10 out of 10 for my voice acting score. Just really based off of, like, everybody's good, I think, but Miss Tom as both Galatea and Supergirl in this episode is just so phenomenal. And to me, this is an episode that for me would be good regardless. It would, you know, it may be set at a 7 or 8 regardless, but that individual performance or that dual performance from that individual bumps it up a couple points all on her own. So yeah, just a great job by Miss Tom this week. And as you mentioned, you know, George Newbern as Superman certainly still has his role to play, and as do of course the great Clancy Brown, CCH Pounder, and the rest of our cast here. So just a really strong job by everybody involved.
Absolutely. We didn't really go into it because of the highlight, but I love anytime Clancy Brown and Kevin Conroy get to interact is great. Mm-hmm. CCH Pounder and Kevin Conroy interacting, it was also always really, really great. So you don't get a lot of Batman in this episode, but as you mentioned, from the moment that he's shown on screen to the time that, you know, to that final scene, every line really, really has a strong impact. And of course, you know, we'll sing the praises of Kevin Conroy each and every day. So really, really fun week this week for our voice cast and reflected in our scores. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up here and get our total scores here. Totaling everything up, I end up with a 32 out of 40. What about you?
And I believe I was just a couple points higher than you, or 1 point higher in a couple of categories, I should say. And that puts me at a 34 out of 40. So another high mark for our Cadmus storyline. As we don't really even need to talk about rewatchability for obvious reasons. It's the second piece of cheese in the middle of this Cadmus sandwich. These last four episodes, you have to watch it. And as mentioned, it's a great, as a trade-off of last week being so dialogue heavy, this one, as we've said, is very action heavy, but it's still a lot of fun, and it still maximizes its minutes. And then it just has the most wild twists and probably in DCAU history with the ending there. So big two thumbs up easily for rewatchability.
Yeah, no argument here. The whole arc deserves a rewatch over and over again. So you're not gonna be able to remove this one and kind of understand what happens in and around it, especially if you end last week and then you start next week episode and have a giant hybrid possessed. Brainiac possessing Lex Luthor's body.
So, that's right. Oh, and speaking of Brainiac, I forgot to slot this in probably in plot. The name of the episode being Panic in the Sky is in itself a Brainiac reference, as there's a famous Superman story from, I believe it's the end of the 80s, called Panic in the Sky, that featured Brainiac pretty prominently. It's actually, I think DC had did a new collection of it a few years ago, so it's probably out there if you wanted to read it, perhaps on the wonderful DC Universe app if you're in the United States. But yeah, there's a fun little extra hint for longtime comic fans and nerds like us as well, in addition to the obvious meaning of that title.
There you go. Thanks for that tidbit. Love that. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap things up for this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, we would love your support for this podcast if you enjoyed it. And there's a couple of different ways for you to do that. The first is to subscribe to us and leave a review on your favorite podcast app. A 5-star review is always appreciated. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts and it lets you leave a little blurb about what you like about the podcast, do so, send it our way. And we'd love to read it on the air and maybe send you a little thank you gift for taking the time to do so. We are all on all of the normal regular podcast apps. You're probably listening to us on one right now. As we mentioned at the top, also, you can subscribe to the Pod Tower YouTube channel. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to that. That helps us out. The more subscribers there, the more exposure the podcast gets. And it's not just us. You're helping out some other great folks as well that do and did great podcasts involving the DCAU. So you might find some content there that you like on top of it. In addition to that, you can also check out the show notes. There's two specific ways to help us there. You can do a monthly subscription to the podcast, which gets Liam and I maybe a cup of coffee. We have some people monthly that do that. We appreciate our supporters. And just as a side note, we do typically run ads for our podcast. We recently got some notification from Spotify that they are changing the way that they do their ads. So those subscriptions are really going to help us if you prefer. But if not, listening to the podcast, the ads do help. So we thank you for listening to our podcast. That's a good way, free way to support us. But the show notes, there's a subscription option there. Support us with a monthly donation. Or you can head over to our shop and buy yourself a piece of merchandise, a shirt or a hat, mug or a sticker. That also helps us out. And of course, you can follow us on social media at DCAU Review, both on the site formerly known as Twitter, now known as X. That we're at DCAU Review there, and we are also at DCAU Review on Instagram. Some good stuff, as we mentioned at the top, and celebrating Batman the Animated Series' 31-year anniversary, Superman the Animated Series' 26-year anniversary. Lots of good stuff here. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks here, we'll be celebrating Justice League's anniversaries. All those September launch dates really happened at the same time. So we've got a lot of anniversaries happening back to back to back, but it's all for a good cause and reason to celebrate. So follow us on those social medias. Liam, speaking of social media, that's usually the first place where you learn about what we'll be covering next week. Two and two together can probably guess if we wrapped up this week's episode, where we'll be headed there. But let's just, for posterity's sake, just let the good folks know what episode we'll be covering on next week's all-new DCAU Review.
That's right. So it will be the very next episode of the series, the bombastic finale of this this main four-part Cadmus Justice League finale here. Again, not counting epilogue. It's literally called an epilogue for a reason. It's separate. It's connected, but it's not an immediate follow-up. So this is kind of the big bombastic finale of this main Cadmus arc, and it is of course the episode Divided We Fall, an all-timer of an episode, I think, for DCAU fans everywhere. So excited to sink my teeth. This is the one, you know, like, we get into a rhythm with this show. You watch the show, you talk about it, it's just out of your mind. You don't think about it because just that's how it goes when you do a show like this, I feel. Mm-hmm. To an extent, other than, you know, talking about it with fans. That's one of the reasons we love interacting with folks on our socials, is it helps bring up points that maybe we didn't think about and also remind us of things we said that we've forgotten that we said. Yeah. But when this one was over and I was staring at Lex Brainiac and that to be continued popped up, I was like, I just had this feeling that I haven't had for a long time, where I was like, oh man, I can't wait for next week.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch that episode. Like, oh, it's going to be so good. Like, I just had that feeling that I haven't had that in, you know, as much as I love doing our show, I feel like I'm good at like compartmentalizing that. And, and this one, I was like, man, this really made me feel like I was 12 years old watching this watching this episode again. Like, this was just some really, really good stuff. It really got me jazzed up knowing what's coming next.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a little bit bittersweet as we bid adieu to this second season of Justice League Unlimited. I guess we've covered all the episodes, right? Do we have any single episodes?
There's a few. One of which will be parsed out for a future Wonder Woman month. Uh-huh. and one that will, as mentioned, be the very last episode we ever do. So
for all intents and purposes, we will say that This will, we'll be bidding adieu for at least for the time being to season two. So it will be bittersweet in that way. Also wrapping up, as we mentioned, arguably the best storyline in the history of the DCAU. So lots to be happy, excited, and sad about. It's a great day for being sad next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.